Welcome to a brand new edition of Problematic Women. I'm Virginia Allen.
And I'm Kristen Eichhammer.
And I'm Crystal Bonham.
Woohoo! Got a full crew. Okay, yay. So it has been really, really hot in Washington, D.C. this week. We went from kind of cold and rainy, and now all of a sudden it's in the 80s, and it definitely feels like summer. So, summer reads. Let's talk about, what are you guys reading right now? Any beach read recommendations as we approach that season? What do I need to be getting on my Kindle, getting on Audible right now?
Oh, are you a Kindle girl?
I am not, but I am an Audible girl.
Okay, I do enjoy Audible.
Yeah.
I'm a book fiend.
Yes.
I tear through books like nobody's business.
Wow.
It's
respect.
I don't know if it's a good thing or not.
It's an addiction.
it's a thing, nevertheless. So, right now I am reading the From Blood and Ash series by Jennifer Armentrout. I'm on The War of Two Queens. Pretty intense. It's like high fantasy. I love that genre.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
For whatever reason. I know, Kristen, you'll get to one of my faves here in a second. But I will just plug a couple of things that I'm looking forward to this summer as far as reading goes. First is Jack Carr's new book, the latest in the Terminalist series called Red Sky Morning.
Ooh.
It releases in June. And big fan of the Terminalist series.
Yeah. Sounds intense.
For many obvious reasons. and then, of course, this fall, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on Dr. Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation.
Nice plug there. Nice plug.
Dawn's Early Light. Yeah. You heard it here first. I've been working on this book for over a year, so I'm ready to, like, have the real thing in my hands, you know?
Whole journey.
Yeah.
And it's got an awesome cover. I know that was something you've been working on all week, so cool cover. kind of going off of that, have no idea how I have gotten to this place, but A Court of Thorn and Roses series.
Let's go.
Insane. Crystal, basically, you know, her and one of our other friends were like, you got to try this book. And I got into it after 7 chapters. That's what they said. Hold on for 7 chapters.
Okay.
And you're going to be addicted. And yeah, I pretty much got through a series of 5 in less than 2 months, which wasn't as fast as Crystal. But
still, that's pretty fast.
That's pretty fast.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to compare yourself to me. I'm a menace when it comes to reading.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's impressive.
If you want a dump truck of a book series, like anything by Sarah J. Maas, it's like a complete emotional roller coaster. You love characters, and the next chapter of the next book, you absolutely despise them. A lot of what are the themes, like enemies to lovers type stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah. And it's also high fantasy. So a lot of like world building and all that
fun
stuff.
It's good for those of you who like Harry Potter or I'm trying to think, I guess not really Twilight, not really the same. It's much better written in my opinion. But if you ever got on those trains, hop on this one because it's so, so good. Other than that, Kristen Hannah is probably one of my favorite authors. She wrote Firefly Lane, which is now a Netflix series. It's not as good as the book, but it's good. And really anything by her is historical fiction. So it's really cool to, like, one of her books is about the Great Depression. Another one is about people relocating to Alaska. You kind of hear stories from people that you never would have thought about, and you learn
That's
things you never
cool.
would have thought about. So Kristen Hannah is another really, really good author.
Okay.
What are you reading?
Well, so I need to look up some of these books. My journey with reading is that I really do enjoy fiction, and specifically historical fiction. But there's some block in me that only allows myself to read fiction truly, like, by a pool in July. And I have this weird emotional conflict of, like, if I'm reading, it needs to, like, better myself and be constructive, which sometimes is not always helpful. So I not to sound too nerdy, but right now I'm more of an Audible person. And so I'm listening to Meditations by Marcus Aurelius right now.
So good.
And so that is very interesting. And I found a good version that kind of breaks down and, like, sets the tone really well of giving you the historical context. And that's helpful because the language is also can be a little bit dense. And Marcus Aurelius, Roman emperor, is talking about things that in the Western world we don't necessarily have a grid for. So it's helpful to have the context. And then I have been going for a long journey, need to finish it. Hopefully we'll finish it this month, with C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters.
Yeah.
And that book is, I can only take it for about 30 minutes and then I'm like, okay.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to process.
Yeah.
Great. Absolutely fantastic. Love it. But you have to kind of take it in small bites.
I used to have a hard and fast rule that is not so hard and fast anymore. But we, I mean, in this world that we work in, we have to read a lot. And
yes.
I mean, I have to tear through a lot of books for prep for Dr. Roberts and things like that. And so it's a lot of serious stuff, a lot of political stuff, a lot of philosophical stuff, which is great. I really enjoy that. But I used to have a rule that was like for every, you know, intense book I read or something for work, I would read like some piece of trash fiction just
I
to
like
kind of decompress.
That. Just to balance.
Then, yeah. Just like a page turner. You
that's
can just
healthy.
Tear through and feel like, I read another book. Check.
I like that model.
Yeah.
All right. I might need to copy that. Crystal, thank you.
A Court of Thorn and Roses is where you can start.
Okay. Gonna add it to Audible. All right, Kristen, let us know what we have queued up today.
Yeah, we have a full show up on today's Problematic Women. Student encampments have led to hundreds of arrests. Virginia visited a local pro-Hamas encampment and reports back what it's like being on the ground. Plus, MSNBC's Nicole Wallace claimed Trump is one of the greatest threats to journalists. That escalated quickly. We debunk her hyperbolic claim. And Taylor isn't the only one breaking records this year. We discuss Travis Kelce's record-breaking payday and why his brother might still be the wealthier man where it counts. And as always, we'll be crowning our Problematic Woman of the Week.
Each week on Problematic Women, we sort through the news to find those stories that are of particular interest to conservative-leaning or problematic women, those whose views and opinions are often excluded by those on the so-called feminist left.
If you are a problematic woman or just someone who supports strong, independent women, please consider supporting us by leaving a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and encouraging others to subscribe. It really does make a difference.
All right, let's get to it. Well, the University of Southern California has actually canceled its large campus graduation over the pro-Palestine and anti-Israel protests on campus. There have been pro-Palestine protests on college campuses literally all over the country, from New York, Georgia, California. They shut them down in Texas real fast. These pro-Palestine protests first began on the University of Columbia University in the state of New York. And at Columbia, protesters, they broke into a campus building really early Tuesday morning. This was a major escalation. They had an encampment. Then they took over a building called Hamilton Hall on campus. Tuesday afternoon, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, he said these protests at Columbia University have been co-opted by professional outside organizations. And I can tell you that my guess is that is 100% accurate and completely true. And Mayor Adams, he told the protesters, he told the students, you all need to leave. He was actually telling parents, call your kids, encourage them to leave Hamilton Hall, to leave these encampments, because if this started out, if it was ever just a pure peaceful protest by students, that is no longer what it was as of Tuesday afternoon. Well, then late Tuesday night, New York police arrived on the campus of Columbia University, and they arrested about 100 students who had occupied Hamilton Hall. If you haven't seen the images, they're pretty wild. Police put this like bridge up into the second story of Hamilton Hall, and you know, in riot gear, went in. They used zip ties to arrest students, hauled them onto a bus. And I'm glad, I'm really glad that Columbia University finally put their foot down and was like, okay, yeah, we're not going to give our campus over to protesters. At the same time, I'm like, geez, Columbia University, why did it take so long?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you all think?
I mean, from my perspective, I was paying more attention to my alma mater, Emory University, where they were super criticized. And actually, they're calling for our president's, the university president's resignation, because they went in full force after a few days. I don't remember exactly how long. And they brought in Georgia State Police, Atlanta Police, and Emory Police. Mm-hmm. And just having been there, Emory Police, nicest people in the entire world if you treat them with respect, naturally. There were 28 total arrests, I think, and there may have been more since I last checked, but 20 of them were community members, which can mean anything from professors to students, but sometimes alumni as well. 8 of those were not, and just from what I've seen going through Instagram, a lot of this was driven by outside organizations.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know why it took Columbia so long, when maybe it was seeing the criticism of schools like Emory and being fearful of, you know, donors pulling money out. I totally can empathize with that. But at the end of the day, you're drawing your line in the sand pretty far from where you should have.
Yep.
And you're showing people that it's okay to hate America. And it's okay to just blatantly disrespect not only your classmates, but law enforcement and college officials. Like, if college does nothing. It should prepare you for the real world. And if this is how we're preparing students for the real world, ooh, I'm scared.
Very scared.
Yeah. I mean, our colleague Jay Green had a really great piece really calling these protesters just spoiled kids that are pretending to be revolutionaries, yeah. Which sums it up perfectly, in my opinion. You know, it's really upsetting. You know, no one, no race, no religion should be afraid or unable to access their dorm, their, mm-hmm. you know, school buildings, the library. I mean, this is finals week for a lot of these schools, yeah. too. It's like, get it together, people.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? And, yeah, I mean, to your point, Carson, like, this is becoming really clear that it's been really well coordinated. You know, there's professional agitators. I know I saw that 45 of the 79 people arrested at the University of Texas in Austin were not students.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a majority of yeah. the arrests were not students. So, you know, it just raises a lot of questions. And honestly, as sad as it is, it's not all that surprising because conservatives for years have been sounding the alarm on the left's march through higher education, mm-hmm. especially. Mm-hmm. And like the chickens are coming home to roost.
Yeah.
You know, you have all these faculty that have been radicalizing these kids for years, mm-hmm. decades yeah. at this point. And now we're seeing the fruit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was really fascinated. I was talking to my mom about this, and she spent 2 years at Northwestern University in Illinois. Mm. And she was like, oh, yeah. She's like, all this language, it's not new. She was like, way back when I was in college, the professors were just as anti-American, were pushing ideology of socialism and Marxism. Like, whew, man, for some of these kind of more Ivy League schools, it's like, okay, this is reaping what has been sown, not just recently, but literally for years, mm-hmm. this massive push towards, you can't even say left. I mean, it's almost off
the charts.
Well,
it's not education. It's not indoctrination.
It's indoctrination. It truly is.
It's normalizing the acceptance of radical ideas. And if you don't accept them, like, for instance, I was conservative in 2016 when, you know, Trump was elected and lost a lot of friends when I started working for him. I remember they attacked at Emory. There was a Trump bus for the campaign and people just threw things, tried to, you know, shake the bus, did all of this yeah. nonsense. And I'm like, this makes us, whatever happened to, you know, representing your school in a way that makes everyone proud? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. not really sure where we're going here with that. But I think what's scariest is that we're starting to see, or what the most concerning, sorry, that's grammar. Most concerning thing here is in some of these universities, police are giving up. At UCLA, we have seen a lot of violence just on campus between protesters and anti-protesters, and police are just not, no one knows where they are. And I don't blame them. Truly, I don't. Like, we saw the defunding the police back in 2020, 2021. I don't blame them for not getting involved because these schools are becoming just insanely violent, not just verbally mm-hmm. because of what these professors are indoctrinating them with, but because there's just so much hate for the other side,
yeah.
whether you're on the left or the right, truly. Like, because I mean, I'm also at fault for having this. Sometimes I get too upset with the other side. And we just need to get back to a place where there's grace, there's love, and understanding that it's okay to have differing opinions. Maybe not in this case where, you know, they're calling for
I mean,
crazy
it's pro-terrorist acting like, but yeah. they're cheering on terrorists.
But we had to start somewhere, right?
Like, right, yeah. But yeah. to your point, I mean, these, like, higher education has devolved from what was once an institution where we could have dialogue and debate and it was healthy. And even though you could disagree with other people and, you know, at the end of the day, still share those disagreements, it wasn't violent
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't personal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we have this environment where not only if you're conservative, you're afraid to speak up. And mm-hmm. if you do, you're canceled, called names, you have no friends,
like yeah.
you're really alienated on campus. But it's just escalated into now what we see spilling over physically onto these college campuses. And to your point about the police being called or not at UCLA, the same thing happened at GW
yep.
here in D.C. where the mayor was like, you got
peace.
It. like, Virginia, D.C. police are not going to show up.
You were there.
I was there
what
on
was it like?
Friday night. I went back on Monday morning. Really interesting to see. So when I was there on Friday night at George Washington University in D.C., this is a pretty large school. They have an encampment of probably about 40 tents that are all set up, which a question mark about where all those tents came from because they all look brand new. And there's signs everywhere. There was a large crowd there Friday night, and about half of the people that I spoke to were not students. Mm-hmm. They were just people from the community who had come. When I went back on Monday, it was a pretty chill vibe. I was there at like 10:30 in the morning, and there was food set up, and students were like working on their laptops and their tents and taking naps. And but they had taken all of the barriers around the area that authorities had set up and pulled them all down and thrown them into this giant pile in the middle of University Yard where all these tents are, and then put Palestinian flags in them. And I also just had to laugh and found some of the signs really interesting that we're seeing. And I repeatedly, there's Gays for Gaza signs, Lesbians for Palestine. And that is really one that is hard to rationalize. I mean, I understand saying, you know, okay, we as a people group are for this group, but it's like, well, do you understand that you would likely be imprisoned if you were in Gaza, and you might be killed if you were openly brutally killed, mm-hmm. if you were openly gay or lesbian or transgender in one of those nations. Mm-hmm. And there's just this disconnect among people, and specifically among students. And it's really fascinating to see. I was encouraged that there was, when I was there on Friday night, there was like five pro-Israel students holding an Israeli flag at GW. And I spoke to them, and they all were said that, you know, we're a little nervous on campus right now, but we feel like it's really important to show our side. And so that was encouraging to see. And I was super encouraged moving south.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Way south.
Way south. So North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, there was pro-Palestinian protests there. And the protesters actually tore down the American flag, pulled down the American flag on campus, and put up the Palestinian flag. Wild. And the response from both from the chancellor of the university and from a group of fraternity brothers was absolutely beautiful. So first off, the chancellor takes that Palestinian flag back down. And in all of this, with the American flag coming up and going down, there's this beautiful image of these fraternity brothers who are all holding up the American flag. And I don't know at what step in the process, if that was as they were putting it up or taking it down, but in order to prevent it from touching the ground, and, you know, they're being called names and having water bottles thrown at them from the pro-Palestinian protesters, and they just stand there holding the flag. And then when the American flag is put back up, all of those students that were standing around that are pro-American, pro-Israel, they're standing there holding an Israeli flag, and they start singing the national anthem. So I want to play a clip of just what that sounded like. This is so cool. This is from the Twitter X account, CA_T.
Through the skies and bright stars, through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so
They are trying to press.
I know. Amazing. I love it. They might not be in tune, but they are making a joyful noise, and it's great.
I love it. And I think to your point, I just Googled UNC's commencement speaker this year, and it's a NASA astronaut. If you look at any of these other schools.
Of course it is.
Yeah, of course it is, obviously. I mean, they're smart.
Who is it?
It is Zena Cardman. I don't I'm not familiar with them. But Emory, something that I just think is insane, had Fauci in 2021, and this year they have an infertility doctor focused on fertility justice. So, like, if that doesn't demonstrate, you know, student interests differing any more than that, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Here's my final take on this whole situation. I think these are the same students that the Biden administration wants to forgive their student loans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a better use of Department of Education dollars, which you all know I abhor and want to see it completely gone, but a better use of the money coming out of the Department of Education would be an all-inclusive trip paid to the Gaza Strip for these protesters.
Yep.
They can go experience it for themselves, mm-hmm. and then, you know,
yep.
get a little taste of the real world.
Come back and let us know what they think. All right. Well, stay tuned because up next, we're going to be talking about a little bit of fake news. But first, we talked last week. We had Jennifer Say on, and she talked about her amazing new clothing brand, XXXY Athletics. So check out that brand if you need your athletic clothing. Now, when it comes to some cute spring and summer clothing, your dresses, your work clothes, you need to check out Culture of Life 1972. It is the very first pro-life clothing line. It was started by a mom and her three daughters at their own kitchen table. Pretty cool. Culture of Life 1972 has donated over $50,000 in 5 years of business as their customers shop dresses, pants, tees, jewelry, and gifts that all support life from the moment of conception until life's final breath. Culture of Life 1972 is clothing with a conscience. So their clothing line not only gives back to crisis pregnancy centers, but also acts as a reminder to pray for all 50 states that they would return to a culture of life. And if you use the code PROBLEMATICWOMEN at checkout, you will save 10%. You can follow them on Instagram at Culture, COL1972 official. Check out their clothing there. And of course, on their website. And again, if you use that promotion code PROBLEMATICWOMEN at checkout, all running together, lowercase, you will save 10% at checkout. And you can actually be a part of furthering a culture of life with your clothing. What could be better than that?
As if we needed another reason to distrust the press, this week, MSNBC's Nicole Wallace should have honestly won an Oscar for her dramatics. If you haven't seen the clip yet, Wallace was discussing the White House Correspondents' Dinner. For those of you who maybe aren't familiar, this is an opportunity to, you know, deliver awards. The formalities of the White House press briefing room are just totally gone. People are making fun, jabbing at the president. The president's jabbing back at the reporters. Super fun time. But Wallace had some very interesting things to share. Let's hear what she decided to say.
Because at this exact time next year, depending on what happens in November, 7 months from now, we can't say for certain that there would even be a White House Correspondents' Dinner or even a free press or even a White House press corps, right? You don't have to have one.
Really, really interesting logic there. If someone is not elected equals no press in the press room of the White House. I'm not sure what that means. Are they going to turn it into like a pool or a sauna? Not
sure. Used to be a pool.
Yeah.
Way back.
Wait, was it actually?
Fun piece of history. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Then they filled it in. So.
But then they filled it in and put the press in it. Hilarious. But this is a theme that I think we're probably going to see more and more, especially now that Trump is all but the official candidate for the Republican Party. And that is just these escalations in these hyperbolic claims from press that don't agree with him. And, you know, we saw this during his presidency, but it's difficult for me to wrap my head around this, having had worked in press relations in the Trump administration. And I just want your thoughts. Like, how do you rationalize, if you can even wrap your head around what she said, how do we rationalize to someone who might be consuming MSNBC's content every single day, listening to the same indoctrination every single day? How do you have a conversation with that person?
Great question. I don't know if you do.
Fair.
And I honestly think that while this is a problem, everyday Americans are looking at corporate media and voting with their remote.
Yeah.
Their
yeah.
viewership
Literally.
Is dropping dramatically. You know, people are recognizing this for what it is. I think it's why you've seen such a rise in the podcast world, for instance, right? Like what we're doing here. People like Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, people that have gone independent, that are doing their own thing, that are reporting facts and having conversations and not just constantly slamming this bias down people's throats.
Yeah.
They're just having conversations and reporting facts and allowing Americans to make a decision for themselves.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me because I think from the press perspective, you do not need at all to like any candidate. And I think it's very fair to raise things that you're seeing that's like, oh, you know, this policy might be harming America in X or Y way. You know, we see from the press, there's obvious bias. But when you start on national television, essentially fear-mongering, telling people all but saying if Trump is elected, there won't be press. I mean, like, what on earth
the
are
hysterics.
You saying?
The hysterics.
Yeah. Like, how on earth could you believe that? Mm-hmm. Like, really? Like, how far have you gone? Like, okay, first off, remember he was president before, and
right.
there was
Did
a very yeah, like, there was a very active and alive and well press.
The show probably was doing better that back then.
Well, and Deadline, if you look at the stats of how these major networks are doing in the month of March, MSNBC posted 1.3 million views, whereas then you look at Fox News, they had 2.1 million views. We're seeing a lot of these major network struggles. CNN had less than a million, so it's really obvious that Americans are getting fed up with these major far-left networks. So they're obviously struggling as a brand. And so maybe they're just trying to, like, say the right thing to try and get, I don't know, get more attention, get more clicks on social media, say something snappy. But it's cheap and it's not good journalism.
It's funny, too, because earlier in the segment, she describes, basically, she says, we have a White House correspondents' dinner, and this is a symptom of a healthy, functioning democracy. She's like, one night hiatus from normal Washington. That is what the White House Correspondents' Dinner is. And I'm like, girl, you are such an elitist. You are such an elitist. You guys, I don't know how much they spent on this, but I don't go to events like that. So for you to say that this is what democracy looks like to everyday Americans, that never in a million years would be invited to this, nor likely want to go to something like this. I was just shocked, honestly. And if you look at her background, it's kind of insane. She was, you know, an advisor and then later the press secretary for George W. Bush. She then, you know, went on to The View, and that's where she kind of, you know, was the token conservative on that show until she wasn't conservative enough for The View, which is hilarious if you consider where we are now. And now she's at MSNBC doing a daily show. And so I think maybe in her head, she's like, I'm standing up for the conservative party. Trump isn't conservative. But it's like, girl, it's been a long time since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you?
Mm-hmm.
It's also just so out of touch that she's literally hysterical on camera crying about how she might be out of a job when you look at the state of the economy right now and actual, real, everyday people mm-hmm. are struggling to put food on the table, gas in the car. Things cost more than they ever have. Wages aren't keeping up with inflation.
Nope.
It's just classic elite out of touch. Woe is me. You know, just listen to what we say, sheeple, and get in line.
Yeah. It's a sad state that we're in.
It is.
Womp womp. Womp womp. So instead, listen to the Daily Signal podcast to get your news.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, let's move into a little bit of pop culture. Let's lighten it up a little bit. Been talking about some heavy things. We mentioned last week that Taylor Swift is out with her new album. We talked about our distaste, Kristen and I's distaste with the album a little bit this week. But Crystal is with us this week. She is a Swiftie, so we need to get her take. Thoughts on the Poets album.
Yeah. Honestly, first reaction, I was a little underwhelmed.
Mm.
But there's a couple songs that have really grown on me.
Florida.
Okay. It's so funny. We have like a work girls chat and we are talking about the Taylor Swift thing. And I dropped in there. I need to just pull it up because if I try to recite this, I'm just going to butcher it. So I was like, okay, I have my official review of Taylor Swift's new album. And it's like a fake conversation between Taylor and Jack Antonoff, her like producer or whatever. So Taylor says, can I get an upbeat track? And Jack's like, finally, yes, like celebrating so happy. Like, we're actually going to do something happy for once. And Taylor then goes on to sing. And part of the lyrics say, I'm so depressed. I act like it's my birthday every day. And he's just like confused. Like, wait, upbeat? Question mark. Like, what are we doing here? And she continues, you know you're good when you can do it, even with a broken heart. And Jack's just like, oh, sigh.
Taylor.
Like, disappointed. Like, I thought we were going back to like
shake it off
days. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, but
she's like, no.
It's fine. I'm, you know, still love Taylor. This album, a little underwhelming, but there's a few that are good.
Yeah. Well, if you don't like Taylor Swift's new album and are a little bit critical like us, maybe you're in the minority because apparently all of society is obsessed with it. Because on Billboard's top 100, Taylor Swift has the top, not one, not two, but the top 14 songs this week, all Taylor Swift. And in fact, among the top 55 songs on Billboard's top 100 chart this week, 31 were Taylor Swift songs. And yes, there are 31 songs on her new album. So, yeah. Every single song on
album.
Her new album,
yeah.
Double album, yeah,
sorry,
is on the top 100. I mean, it is, yeah. So the Tortured Poets Department, that feels like it's hard to say, the Tortured Poets Department became the first album in Spotify history to surpass 1 billion streams within, I think that's the first week of release. That's also according to Billboard's. And also she broke her own record. So with her album Midnights, she became the first artist in history to simultaneously occupy all 10 of the top 10 spots on Billboard Hot 100. And like she's, I just said, now she has the top 14 spots. So she's just out there breaking records, doing amazing things, but she's not the only one setting records right now.
Yeah. And, you know, have to wonder, maybe it's because all of these lyrics are so, they're resonating with the bass. You know, like I sometimes joke about being like super depressed. Maybe people are just turning it on and they're like, yeah, I feel that.
Well, no, there certainly is an element where I think you can either, you're there or you can remember a time of like, oh yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
And so, and Taylor Swift does, and not to play on words with the album, but she is a bit of a poet. I mean, she understands emotions well, and she's able to put those into songs that resonate with people.
Yeah, that's her business model.
It's her business model, and it works.
Yeah, but her boyfriend's business model is a little different.
Win, 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 win.
Travis Kelce just became the highest paid tight end in the NFL. Kelce signed a 2-year contract with Kansas City Chiefs. The contract is worth, oh my gosh, $34.25 million. He has won 3 Super Bowls, so obviously, you know,
well deserved.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Execution of his skills.
He's doing the job.
Yes,
he's doing
showing
the job.
Up, putting in work. It's all good.
And not at all to like pat Travis Kelce on the head and like put him down. But I was a little curious. I was like, okay, I wonder how that compares to how much Taylor Swift is worth. So I did a quick Google search. And according to Google, Kelce is worth about $40 million, and Taylor Swift is estimated to be worth $1.1 billion.
Ooh, he's worth maybe one of her legs, not even.
On a good day.
But as we've been talking about Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift was, what's the new name people are calling them, that mashup of
their
names?
I've heard Trailer,
and I just laugh because I don't believe that.
I don't like it.
Don't like that either.
I haven't heard
something
anything better.
Else.
It just makes me think of a trailer park, which I'm like, that does not fit their aesthetic. But anyway. but Jason Kelce. So Jason Kelce is Travis Kelce's older brother, and he just retired from the NFL, where he played for the Eagles for 13 seasons, the Philadelphia Eagles. And he announced his retirement about a month ago. The man wept nonstop throughout
love of the
this,
game, man.
I mean, it was a beautiful thing throughout this retirement speech. But he honored his family, his dad, his brother, and he honored his own wife and children in a really precious way. And I just think that this just as much, if not way, way more worth listening to than Swift's album this week. We have to listen to these comments from Jason Kelce because they are just so precious.
I won't forget the Eagles Christmas party in 2014 and heading out afterwards with a bunch of my teammates to Buffalo Billiards, where my life would change forever. That night, I'd meet my future wife. I still remember the moment she walked through the door. The first instance is burned in my retina. It was like she glided through the opening, an aura around her. Then she started talking. And I thought, man, is this what love feels like? She was beautiful and smart, serious, yet playful. I knew it right away. I think it's no coincidence I have enjoyed my best years of my career with Kylie by my side. Every accolade I have ever received has come with her in my life. She has brought the best out of me through love, devotion, support, honesty, intelligence, and of course, a swift kick in the ass from time to time. She has also given me three beautiful girls and a life that increasingly brings me more fulfillment off the field than it does on. We've had a great run, Kai.
Ah, just the sweetest.
He's a girl dad. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he has three little girls. He loves his wife.
That changes everything.
BRB crying.
And what a sweet, neat, cute, like there after Christmas party. Just adorable.
I love that. Yeah. I love that he brought that up in the retirement speech because I'm sure like I've never watched a retirement speech for the NFL, but I'm sure it's more focused on like, these guys are my family. We broke all these records, had all these accomplishments. Like, it's so cool that he brought it back, mm-hmm. you know, to his family and they were there, obviously, Buffalo Billards, but his wife, that is what he was focusing on. That's so cool.
Yeah.
He also, because I'm obsessed. He mentioned that being a father brings more fulfillment than football and that a loving, present father is the greatest gift a child could ever have, which is just so heartwarming. And it's like, especially in today's day and age where we have, you know, this like masculinity crisis. Mm-hmm. I think it's just so nice to have a role model for men, young men of like loving, strong father figures who are doing the right thing and aren't ashamed to stand up and say it.
If we had fathers in the home, I am convinced so many of our social problems would disappear almost 100%. Overnight. Prison rates would drop, drug addiction would drop, alcoholism would drop if we just had more men like Jason Kelce who were involved in their families.
All I heard were green flags. All I heard. Zero toxic masculinity and only green flags.
Go, Jason Kelce. All right, well, stay tuned because up next we crown our problematic woman of the week. Are you looking for an easy and entertaining way to keep up with the news you care about? The Daily Signal and Heritage Foundation YouTube channels offer interviews with policy experts on the most critical issues and debates America is facing today, as well as short explainer videos that break down complex issues and documentaries that dive deep into the ways policy actually impacts people. Go ahead and subscribe to both the Daily Signal and Heritage Foundation YouTube channels today. You can search for either on your YouTube app or visit youtube.com/Heritage Foundation and youtube.com/Daily Signal. Now it is that time once again. It's our favorite time of the week here on the show. Time to crown our problematic woman of the week. And the crown goes to
the five middle school girls from Harrison County, West Virginia.
All right. So recently in West Virginia, there were five middle school girls. We're not using their names here. I'm actually not even sure that their names are public, but we wouldn't want to use them anyway just to protect their privacy. These are minors. But these five girls, they willingly forfeited from a shot put competition because they were competing against a biological male. And for the girls, for them, it was an act of protest. They were saying, no, we're not willing to compete against someone who obviously has a biological advantage over us. And in principle, this just isn't right to force little girls to have to compete against men. So they stepped out, they removed themselves. But in response, on April 25th, the school told the girls' parents that the girls would not be allowed to compete in an upcoming track and field meet. Well, now the West Virginia Attorney General, Patrick Morsi, he has filed a lawsuit against Harrison County Board of Education in defense of these girls. And I just think, wow, this is incredible that at the age of, gosh, what, like 11, 12, 13, these girls are taking a stand in a way that's really uncomfortable. And I've heard other professional athletes who've spoken out on this issue and individuals in this space say, you know what, this would actually get people's attention really fast.
Yeah.
If women just say, no, we're not going to compete against a man, that's a really hard choice to make. You're kind of putting a target on your own back. And at the same time, well, you can't have competitions if all of the competition is just saying, no, we're not going to put up with this.
Mm-hmm.
So it sends a powerful message.
How do we get to the point where the middle schoolers are the adults in the room?
Literally.
That's what Literally. I want to know. Because it's just, it's pathetic.
But it's good it's happening that early because those are formative years. Middle school, yeah. mm-hmm. I just remember like jokes and TV shows describing middle school as like hazing situations for high school, right? Like that's what makes or breaks you sometimes socially. So let's make or break this idea that men can play women's sports before we get to high school, before college is even involved, before scholarships are even involved. Let's do it. Let's shut it down.
People.
Yeah, shut it down. Like the border. Shut it down.
We're not doing it.
Enough is enough. All right. Well, congratulations to those girls. We are with you. We're backing you. Good job for setting an example.
Proud of you.
Very proud of you. With that, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Problematic Women.
Join us next Thursday morning for a brand new edition. And in the meantime, please subscribe and share.
As conservatives, we need your support in the podcast world. So take a minute, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Spotify, CastBox, Apple Podcasts, wherever you like to listen. It makes a huge difference.
Have a great day. Whoa, no. Have a great week.
Problematic Women is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation.
It is a product of The Daily Signal, produced by Lauren Evans and Virginia Allen. And be sure to follow Problematic Women on Instagram.
We produce Problematic Women in remembrance of our dear friend and former co-host, Bree Payton.